Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
This is a song about a protest on the Sunset Strip. In case you think it's a big Vietnam War, and it was. The origins of the song are a curfew protest on the Sunset Strip. Yeah, that's the truth. It's awesome, isn't it? One of the great anti-war and '60s songs.
Out of line, the man come and take you away.
Stop, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, what's that sound? Everybody look.
So I normally play that when something's really wrong. And I think something really is. And we'll talk about that here. I don't know what happens at some times to my audio card. But it's happened twice in the last couple weeks. And that is something zaps it. And then something zaps it. And then it speeds up. And there's like static in it. So I apologize for yesterday. And the thing that frustrates me is yesterday was kind of I won't say an introduction to today, but I'm not going to beleaguer the point. But we're not having an honest discussion about the issues relative to race in this country. That narrative has been, it's a one-way narrative where the facts don't seem to matter. That you can be armed and you can resist the police and you're a victim. And so I don't know, and nobody can push back on that narrative in the country. If you push back on it, it's kind of like pushing back against Joe McCarthy. You'll do so at the peril of your own career. And so you see reporters who just stand there. They don't ask hard questions. They don't say, yeah, what about the knife or what about the gun? Or they don't, you know, you can't say that stuff. And so it's pretty amazing what you watch going on in the country today. And so that's the reason for the music, in that when the media doesn't report the truth, I mean, what the hell, man? And the police, like they did in Kenosha, Wisconsin, or the mayor or whoever the political leader that decides when to have the press conferences, when they sit on that information for 3 days while the city burns, and you have to wonder, like, you know, what the hell, man? Who's in charge? And how the hell did they ever get elected? So, yeah, it's pretty amazing to watch. So that in the news. And it's law and order is so much now a question relative to polls. Joe Biden's now going to talk about law and order when he ignored it. Is he going to be your law and order guy? Or is he just going to be not Donald Trump? So interesting little world we live in these days. And I don't know. It's like, how does it get better? Who amongst the people in the media summons the courage to tell the truth at the peril of being canceled? Yeah, who does that? Right? Only somebody with a lot of money and a big bank account. So maybe it will be led by very successful journalists. Maybe they will summon the moral courage to somehow or other lead the nation in its time of need, when we need people that will tell the truth. Seems to be in short supply, in my opinion. And again, I don't have, the truth is the truth. You know, I'm not saying that the cops are always right, and I'm not saying whoever gets sideways with them is always wrong, but you can't have a grown-up discussion if you can't talk about the truth. And so, anyway, that's the reason for playing this song this morning. It's called For What It's Worth, done by a band named Buffalo Springfield. Had a lot of pretty prominent people in it. Yeah, so anyway. I want to play for you something I listened to last night. And then I want to talk about an article in the New York Times about the Marine Corps and racism and promotion to general officer and things like that. But before I do that, I want to play this. This is a thing from Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. It's a little excerpt that I created for something. And I ran across it one night when I was troubleshooting. When I was troubleshooting my audio stuff. So I re-recorded some stuff, and I'm looking at my audio card settings and all kinds of things like that. So I see this Allmarin Radio, Frankl. And so I want to share this with you. Frankl's if you haven't read or listened to Man's Search for Meaning, okay, stop what you're doing this second and write it down on your wrist. Listen to Man's Search for Meaning. Right, just download it to your phone and listen to it in your car. So I want to play that for you. I want to say one more thing about what's going on around the country. A discussion about the truth shouldn't be a partisan issue. A discussion about the truth should be in everybody's interest. The condemnation of the violence in our cities and people's right to express themselves and assemble peacefully should be in everybody's interest to promote. But it doesn't seem to be that way. And so to me, in the absence of national leaders doing the things that they're supposed to do, And what you're going to see is you're going to see something really bad happen one of these days. And I mean a mass shooting or a big gunfight between people on both sides that are armed. And because we can't control this stuff, because our national leaders don't stand up for what's right, at some point it's going to go really, really bad. And so what, a couple years ago, the only reason that probably they would have been Republican lawmakers weren't shot and killed during a baseball practice in Washington, D.C., was because the guy who was doing the shooting tried to get in the gate that was locked and they saw him. And people ran and people responded. If he walks in the first base gate instead of the third base gate, he's inside a fenced area with a rifle. Yeah. And then he starts shooting and killing people. Now, the question is, the country digested that. It was, everybody was all aghast, right? When it happened. The tone has got to change, but it never does. And so anyway, what's it going to take? Is it going to take dozens of people being murdered in some shootout between two hostile groups that decide to get it on, like is what really happened in Charlottesville? When the Antifa group and the whatever boys, when they decide that they're going to fight and the rest of us don't know about it and just show up, thought I was showing up through a protest. Yeah. That's my goofy impersonation. Not a good one, I know. So is that what it's going to take? And you just talk about leaders doing, I mean, think about the thing that happened in Seattle. Somebody takes over the block that you live in, and the mayor doesn't do anything to eject them. Somebody essentially forces their will on you, and you have a mayor who says, yeah, it's like a block festival. No, it wasn't. That's not why you got elected. That's not why you took an oath. And so it's this liberal utopia that will come crashing around, you know, cities in this country. Let me tell you, you know, when those officers get found, when they're either acquitted or found guilty of much, much lesser charges in Minneapolis, what's going to happen in Minneapolis? They're going to burn Minneapolis down? Read the two articles I posted in Hour One yesterday. And look at the facts relative to the autopsy. Look at the facts relative to a condition called excited delirium and the appropriate police response to excited delirium. Look at that. And those police officers were doing what the Minneapolis Police Department's manual tells them to do. And they're not going to be convicted of it. I'm just read the evidence. So, and what's going to happen? Minneapolis is going to get burned down because the mayor. And then there's the second article is about what the mayor knew when he stepped in front of everybody and said it was racist cops. And so you have this toxic mess of, it's more than a cocktail. It's a toxic tsunami of weak leaders and a media that doesn't tell the truth about an issue. And so we can't have a grown-up debate. And then you have young people who get their, you have young people who get their news off social media. And that fuels this disconnect of how can this happen? Well, it happens because we have this layer, this cake, this tsunami of toxic shit. It starts with the media that won't tell the truth. It starts with leaders who won't stand up for what's right, to include the First Amendment. And then you have young people that, I'm writing this down as I do it, these layers that contribute to this thing. And then if you say, yeah, but he was reaching for a knife in his car, right? You're judged a racist. Or if you say, yeah, but he had a gun, you're a racist. So to me, that's what's to be concerned about, is if you can't have a discussion about the truth, then where the hell does it go? And so, anyway, so I'm officially concerned. But in the midst of that, I was listening to Viktor Frankl last night. So listen to this. This is awesome. And then I want to talk about a New York Times story about racism in the Marine Corps relative to promotion to general officer.
Freedom is part of the story and half of the truth. Being free is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon whose positive aspect is being responsible. Freedom may degenerate into mere arbitrariness unless it is lived in terms of responsibleness. That is why I would recommend that the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast be supplemented by a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast.
Is that awesome? Freedom that we all scream about is only half of it. The other part is being responsible. Yay? I could relay it to my last discussion, but I won't. Right? He goes on.
There is indeed what is called the wisdom of the heart, or one may call it the ontological self-understanding, a phenomenological analysis.
Hold on, let me play you another little. This is about 4 minutes of the book, Man's Search for Meaning, and you'll hear that quote again. The Statue of Responsibility that belongs on the West Coast. So here you go. Man's Search for Meaning, little excerpt from it.
To be sure, a human being is a finite thing, and his freedom is restricted. It is not freedom from conditions, but it is freedom to take a stand toward the conditions. As I once put it, as a professor in two fields, neurology and psychiatry, I am fully aware of the extent to which man is subject to biological, psychological, and sociological conditions. But in addition to being a professor in two fields, I am a survivor of four camps, concentration camps, that is. And as such, I also bear witness to the unexpected extent to which man is capable of defying and braving even the worst conditions conceivable. I had none of this in mind when I wrote the book in 1945, and I did so within 9 successive days and with the firm determination that the book would be published anonymously. In fact, the first printing of the original German version does not show my name on the cover, though at the last moment, just before the book's initial publication, I did finally give in to my friends, who had urged me to let it be published with my name at least on the title page. At first, however, it had been written with the absolute conviction that, as an anonymous opus, it could never earn its author literary fame. I had wanted simply to convey to the reader by way of a concrete example that life holds a potential meaning under any conditions, even the most miserable ones. And I thought that if the point were demonstrated in a situation as extreme as that in a concentration camp, my book might gain a hearing. I therefore felt responsible for writing down what I had gone through, for I thought it might be helpful to people who are prone to despair. And so it is both strange and remarkable to me that, among some dozens of books I have authored, precisely this one, which I had intended to be published anonymously so that it could never build up any reputation on the part of the author, did become a success. Again and again I therefore admonish my students, both in Europe and in America, don't aim at success. The more you aim at it and make it a target, the more you're going to miss it. For success, like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must ensue. And it only does so as the unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. Happiness must happen, and the same holds for success. You have to let it happen by not caring about it. I want you to listen to what your conscience commands you to do, and go on to carry it out to the best of your knowledge. Then you will live to see that in the long run, I say, success will follow you precisely because you had forgotten to think of it. We must never forget that we may also find meaning in life even when confronted with a hopeless situation, when facing a fate that cannot be changed. For what then matters is to bear witness to the uniquely human potential at its best, which is to transform a personal tragedy into a triumph, to turn one's predicament into a human achievement. When we are no longer able to change a situation, just think of an incurable disease such as inoperable cancer, we are challenged to change ourselves. Freedom, however, is not the last word. Freedom is only part of the story and half of the truth. Freedom is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon whose positive aspect is responsibleness. That is why I recommend that the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast be supplemented by a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast.
Right? I mean, how awesome is that? He wrote Man's Search for Meaning in 9 days. Never wanted to put his name on it. So I think there's a lesson in there. The lesson is do what you're passionate about, right? In writing the book, he's, you know, as he just said, I was trying to send a message to people that are prone to despair, that even in the worst of circumstances, you choose how you respond to this stuff. And that's why I download it, you know, buy some version of audiobooks, Audible. I think it's the biggest, but whatever. Find audiobooks, download Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, and listen to it every once in a while. Listen to snippets of it. And you'll hear that kind of stuff. The Statue of Responsibility. What would that statue look like? Now I'm curious. What would the Statue of Responsibility look like? The Statue of Liberty holds a torch. If you have an idea, send me an email with a picture. The Statue of Responsibility, what does that look like? Yeah. So, interesting. Now, I want to, I will begin the program here. I will actually finish the opening, and then we'll talk about an article that I've been sent by a few people that takes on the issue of the Marine Corps and race in terms of promotion to becoming a general officer. So, good morning to you on the first day of September. Yeah. The first day of September, the kids are back in school for those of us that have them. Yep. Young parents that we are. And so good morning to you. On this Tuesday morning, welcome to All Marine Radio. This is dedicated to Viktor Frankl. Yeah, a man who's impacted my life. I learned the lesson from Libby Weichel, Luke Weichel's mom in Alabama, and about what it is to give of yourself, and then ultimately give your suffering meaning. And so, but Frankl taught the world that lesson. and with a with an incredible book that you should listen to. And so his wisdom. Now, what would the statue of responsibility look like? Maybe I should ask the Mensa brothers that question. What would that statue look like? Would it be something like the Washington Monument? I mean, it certainly couldn't be a human representation, right? What would the statue of responsibility look like in Frank that would represent, right? It would be right inside, you know, San Francisco, past the Golden State Bridge, between the Golden Gate Bridge and Alcatraz, or maybe on right on Alcatraz. We could find a plot of ground on Alcatraz and we can put the Statue of Responsibility there, right in the shadow of the prison. That would be awesome. Oh, no, we couldn't do that then. You might have somebody try to take it over again like they did in the 60s. Then they found it was freezing-ass cold out there and miserable and wet. Oh, my God. Anyway, so this is dedicated to Viktor Frankl and the incredible book called Man's Search for Meaning that you should listen to at some point in your life. Yeah. And then if you have an idea for the Statue of Responsibility, right? And again, I say that, and I mean, it's kind of interesting what pops into your head. Well, I mean, so the Statue of Liberty means that you're free. The Statue of Liberty means when the police come, cooperate with them and you won't get shot. That's what that means. That's what you're responsible for. So that's on all of us as citizens in a free nation to respect the law. And that means the law enforcement officers that come to enforce the law. And Jason Whitlock from Fox calls out LeBron James last week in an incredible act of moral courage, I might add, and calls him a bigot and says, you know, LeBron James says all this stuff. I'm scared. He's not scared. He doesn't go any place without his security people. Nobody gets near that guy. And he said, look, I'm not scared. People like me aren't scared. And the first lesson is, when the police show up, cooperate with them. And he went on to say, you have virtually no chance of getting shot in this country if when the police show up, you cooperate with them. But that's not even part of the discussion. And like I said, the reason that the truth and that trial in Minneapolis, I mean, imagine the shock for the American people when they're like, what? Well, we don't care what the autopsy says. Well, the court does, though. Yeah, but, you know, on my Twitter feed, and this guy said this. Yeah, but see, those police officers, when you look in the court of law, what they were doing based on what they saw is exactly what this white paper says that's endorsed by the Minnesota Police Department says in terms of how we handle this. We'll handle this in accordance with this research paper that is embodied in this white paper, right? We embrace that. And so, I mean, can you imagine the disconnect? I mean, the craziness that's going to ensue because we can't have this conversation because we don't have leaders that stand up and say, hey, everybody needs to take a breath. National Guard's going to be here tonight. You know, peaceful protests by permit will be allowed. Unlawful assembly that borders on riot will not be. It's kind of the way you do it, I think. So anyhow, this is dedicated to Viktor Frankl for reminding us that in a free nation, we all have the responsibility to act in a responsible manner. Keep your fingers crossed. Maybe at some point we can even have a discussion about it.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
Come on, that is awesome.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. Time to check the weather. Cloudy and 74 in Quantico. Down the coast, Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, home of 2nd Marine Division and 2MEF. It is, to all my friends over in the 2nd MAW at Cherry Point, what is up? Cloudy and 87 down there. 29 Palms continues its cooling trend. Sunny and 84, nice. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, clouds in 69 degrees, like that. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 74 degrees. On the island of Okinawa, they're bracing for a typhoon that was supposed to hit, I think, this morning. Cloudy and 83 degrees. So we're monitoring the situation from our situation room. Yeah, not nearly as breathless as Wolf Blitzer's. High wave warning in effect on Okinawa. Storm surge advisory in effect. Thunderstorm advisory in effect. Heavy rainfall advisory in effect. Gale advisory. So advisory, 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 advisory. High wave warning. Warning has an R in it. That means it's real. Advisory has an A. Starts with an A. Yeah, I'm not really sure why that. Advisory has an R in it, but it's not real. Warning has an R in it. It's real. Watch has no R in it, which means it's just an advisory. I think that's how they meant that. That's how I got taught it. No, there's no R in it. So that's going on in Okinawa. Probably more than you care to know, but what the hell. Currently in the Helmand Province, South Central Afghanistan. Clear, dark, and 83. And in Al Anbar, warmed up a little bit. Sunny and 106 late in the day in the city of Ramadi at the home of All Marine Radio, where the weather has been absolutely spectacular. Not going to lie to you. Yesterday was absolutely delightful. Currently, it is cloudy and 68 degrees right now. Looking for a high of 75 today, 75 tomorrow, 78 on Thursday. 82 on Friday and 92 on Saturday? Like, what happened? What happened? This was going along so well. 92, what in God's name? Okay, when we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about an article that a number of people, to include Bob Nielsen, sent me about racism relative to general officer promotion in the Marine Corps. So appeared in the New York Times. I think it's entitled "The Few, the Proud, the White." More, and let me tell you, it's a stereotype that the Marine Corps fights, and the Marine Corps very conscious of it, all the way up to the Commandant. Everybody in the Marine Corps is conscious of it. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, and he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis, but sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yesterday, a number of people emailed me an article about the Marine Corps that's been written in the New York Times. It's written by a woman by the name of Helene, H-E-L-E-N-E, Helene Cooper. It's entitled "The Few, the Proud, the White: The Marine Corps Balks at Promoting Generals of Color." So let me read you parts of the story. A respected combat-tested black colonel has been passed over three times for promotion to brigadier general. What does his fate say about the Corps? So, published on August 31st. Now, the first thing I'll tell you, Marine Corps are incredibly conscious about race, right, and its own demographics. So why wouldn't the Marine Corps promote a black colonel to the rank of brigadier general? Because the entire board is racist? So in this day and age, this day of the internet, this day that everybody sees your demographics, everybody sees it. So that's the allegation, that the board that sits to consider all these candidates is racist. So, I think if you talk to people that have been around the Marine Corps for a long time, they will tell you that that's not true. Absolutely disagree with it. The story. All things being equal, Colonel Anthony Henderson, and I don't want to talk about it, but you can't avoid his record, right? If you're going to talk about the story. Colonel Anthony Henderson has a military background that the Marine Corps says it prizes in a general. Multiple combat tours, leadership experience, and the respect of those he commanded, and most who commanded him. Most who commanded him. That's ominous. Yet three times he's been passed over for brigadier general, prominent one-star rank that would put Colonel Henderson on the path to the top tier of Marine Corps leadership. Last year, Navy Secretary Richard Spencer even added a handwritten recommendation to Colonel Henderson's candidacy. Eminently qualified Marine we need now as a brigadier general, he wrote. But never in its history has the Marine Corps had anyone other than a white man in its most senior leadership posts. Colonel Henderson is black. Quote, Tony Henderson has done everything you would do in the Marines except get a hand salute from Jesus Christ himself, said Milton D. Whitfield, a former Marine gunnery sergeant who served for 21 years. Proud and fierce in their identity, the Marines have a singular race problem that critics say is rooted in decades of resistance to change. As the nation reels this summer from protests challenging centuries-long perceptions of race, the Marines, who have long cultivated a reputation as the nation's strongest fighting force, remain an institution where a handful of white men rule over 185,000 white, African-American, Hispanic, Asian men and women. Quote, it took an act of Congress last year to get them to integrate by gender at the platoon level, said Representative Anthony G. Brown, Democrat of Maryland, and a former Army helicopter pilot. And now they continue to hold on to that 1950s visions of who Marines are. So, again, what's interesting is in the second hour today, you're going to hear Lauren Serrano. She's a major now. She wrote a piece about why women don't belong in the infantry when she was a lieutenant captain. And you're going to hear her talk about the impact of that on her career. And Lauren is not afraid to engage, right, in the discussions about the issues of the day. But there's a question that goes with that. If you take a position that is contrary to, you know, the norm or the status quo, do you do so at the peril of your career? Can you even talk about it? So, interesting. So that was a gender integration study. And the Marine Corps did its own the Marine Corps did its own study and said, look, this is what we this is how integrated units, gender integrated units performed. And so I think, and that was led by the Commandant of the Marine Corps at the time, who would go on to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joe Dunford. Nobody would call Joe Dunford a bigot, be it by gender or by race. But I think he did believe that he had a moral obligation to say, look, this is going to come at a cost, and attempt to outline the cost in terms of data by conducting this study that took a fair number of Marines to do and a fair number of training, you know, a fair number of training events to collect the data. But when you read this, it took an act of Congress to get them to integrate by gender at the platoon level. And now they continue to hold on to the 1950s vision of who Marines are. What happens if it's a vision that is the validity of which is borne out by the data of that study? Should you just say, yeah, this is going to have no impact? And to me, that's the world we're living in, that we're going to fairy dust this stuff, okay? So the fact that the Marine Corps was willing to have that discussion about gender and the impact of gender on people that are going to close with the bad guys, when the other institutions in the country, they just rolled over. They just rolled over and said, yeah, sure, no problem. And I'll tell you what, if you want to look at the organization that's done it the fastest and the most, it's your United States Navy. And if you won't have these discussions about race, about gender, and about the true impact, then get ready to be the Navy. Because we're all going to just pretend like it's all great. And we're going to drive ships into each other. We're going to have, you know, our special operations guys can't do something right, for the life of them. Everywhere they go, there is this carnage of stupidity relative to their conduct. And now you have ships being set on fire by sailors and then burning in port for 4 days. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I mean, how long did the Forrestal burn when it caught fire at sea? Did it burn for 4 days before they had that thing out? Anyway, the article goes on. Current and former Marine Corps officials point to Colonel Henderson's personality as an explanation for why he has been passed over, including what they call his tendency to speak his mind, traits that have not disqualified white Marine colonels. I think that's a bullshit statement. How does she know? You could be a white colonel and you can be caustic or however you would describe him, and that you'll get promoted too. Our general officers are high-end conformists, right? You don't see general officers speaking their mind. I don't get emails from general officers saying, hey, Mac, I'd love to come on All Marine Radio this week. It does not happen. They don't say shit. They don't say shit. So it's like, oh, so-and-so, if he clicks off safe. Name one. Show me who clicks off safe that's a Marine officer. So it's not like white officers that click off safe and are caustic and they run their jib. Again, I don't see that. And again, I don't know Tony Henderson at all. So I'm not talking about him. Out of 82 generals overall today, there are 6 African-American brigadier generals. What is that? It's not quite 13%. So what would it be? there are 6 African American, so there's 7 total out of 82. So that would be just short of 10%. 7 divided by 82 equals 8.5%. So 8.5%, I'll tell you, that's higher than I thought it would be. Charles F. Bolden, who would go on to command 2 space shuttle missions before becoming the first African American to lead NASA, received only 2 stars in the Marine Corps. To make it to 4 stars, a candidate needs combat postings in his background. The pronoun his is apt because no woman has made it to 4 stars in the Marines. Such a leader would have commanded troops in Iraq or Afghanistan, bearing responsibility for the lives of Marines who shed blood in poppy fields, mountains, and in desolate desert villages. The Marine Corps makes exceptions to this only combat arms rule when it gives 4 stars to aviators. Well, aviators are considered combat arms. At least, you know, fighter pilots are. Attack aircraft guys are considered combat arms. Now, if you're a support aviator, that's different. Helicopter guys are considered combat arms. But she goes on, but they are white men. It is difficult for those outside the armed forces to understand the prestige that comes with becoming a 4-star general or admiral. 4-star officers sit on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, oversee entire branches of the armed service. She goes on. Now, Paul Kennedy's a friend of mine. He's quoted in here. Officially, the Marine Corps says it cares deeply about diversity. Quote, only as a unified force, free from discrimination, racial inequality, and prejudice, can we fully demonstrate our core values and serve as an elite warfighting organization, as the elite warfighting organization America requires and expects us to be. General David H. Berger, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, wrote in a June 4th message to service members. Now, she doesn't mention that General Berger was the first service chief to ban Confederate symbols. Doesn't mention that. She mentions the George Floyd protest. Since the protest, senior Defense Department officials have begun an internal examination on how to increase the percentage of minority service members in its predominantly white officer corps. One of the steps Secretary of Defense Mark Esper has announced is to remove the photographs of officer candidates from promotion board hearings. Now, we've talked about that issue, and that is going to be, you know, delicate, because the services are all intensely interested in both gender and race. So what happens if that stuff goes the wrong way? What happens if a board, you know, doesn't promote as many females? What happens if a board doesn't promote as many minorities as that data is expunged from the record? Do you think the service chiefs are going to allow that to happen? The answer to that is no. The Marines have the worst diversity representation in their top ranks. In 2013, the branch released a photo of its 6 4-star generals all gathered in desert camouflage at the Commandant's house. John Kelly, Jim Mattis, Joe Dunford, Jim Amos, John Allen, and John Paxton. The men are smiling, holding their white Marine Corps coffee mugs. All 6 have garnered respect across the political spectrum. But the black Marines, the photo evokes a place where they do not belong. And this is Gunny Whitfield. Look, I'm a dedicated Marine. But the photo makes me feel like they're saying none of you are good enough to get to the high level of authority or leadership, and I'm ashamed. Senior Marine leaders, when questioned about diversity in the officer corps, say they know they have a problem. Quote, the Marine Corps actually has given this a great deal of thought because we have struggled with the issue of diversity, said General Kenneth McKenzie, one of 3 4-star Marine generals serving today. But in explaining the absence of anyone but white men in top position, Marine officials often first cite the small number of African-American Marines who go into the combat arms, the area from which all but one four-star generals have risen. Quote, we need to recognize that the bread and butter of the Marine Corps is the combat arms. General David A. Audigon, the Deputy Commandant for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, said. He declined to speak specifically about Colonel Henderson, who's 53 years old, citing privacy and personnel concerns. He said 63% of African Americans in the Marine Corps were in support areas like logistics and engineering. 22% were in aviation. Only 15% were in combat arms. Colonel Henderson is in combat arms. Quote, Tony's got an incredible record. He should be a general officer, said Paul Kennedy, a retired major general. Who led the Marine Corps recruiting command. So then they talk about Tony Henderson. So I would submit to you that this, the Marine Corps is acutely aware of its demographics. And when you see cases like this, they would be things that nobody wants to talk about in public. But when you're passed over three times, it's a fairly, and so I don't know Tony Henderson. I don't know anything about his case or his package and how it was briefed and blah, 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 blah. I do know this, though, that the Marine Corps is acutely aware of the problem. And if you're a colonel and you can't make the next step, normally there's a reason for that because the Marine Corps wants to promote you because they're aware of it. Now, again, I don't know that. All I know is from previous examples, and when you get to it and you know people that were on the board and they'll talk about some of it, or they won't talk about it, they'll just look at you and shake their head. Yeah, can't do it. And the motive is not because they're racist. So, and I'm not apologizing for any system. All I'm saying is it is what it is. The Marine Corps is aware of it. The Marine Corps looks to promote. I mean, somebody sent me an email yesterday that said that the selection rate for women from lieutenant colonel to colonel is close to 100%. What? Wait a minute. What is it with every other demographic? Well, why is that? Because the Marine Corps knows it has a problem. The Marine Corps is desperately trying to fix that. Close to 100% selection rate from lieutenant colonel to colonel? Is that true? So anyway, I think when you see things like this, people are trying to be polite in public. And the answer is, yeah, there's things in his or her record, whoever the hell they're talking about, and I don't think it's fair to make him the poster child for it, because when you do, then you say, okay, if we're going to defend ourselves, we have to throw him under the bus. And nobody will do that in public. It's not the way we do it. So where does that leave? Where does that leave them? Well, it doesn't leave them in a good place. So it'd stand there and look like you're a racist. So to me, the question is, will General Berger or anybody respond to this? Or will they just say, hey, we need to let this thing go? Okay? We just need to let it go. Everybody take a breath and let it go. So, interesting story. Let me do the top five stories in Early Bird. And then you're going to hear from somebody else who I think you're going to hear Lauren Serrano talk about the article that she wrote in, I can't remember what year it was, that women didn't belong in the infantry. And that, I mean, she got put on, I mean, you'll hear her tell the story about trending on Facebook. What? I'm doing what? What is that? So you'll hear her talk about that, and you'll hear her concern about being punished for participating in a debate. And in the interview, I ask her, well, did you see that the spokesperson for Boeing, who made a similar argument in the 1980s, writing in the Naval Institute's Proceedings magazine. So all he did was participate in a debate, and he said he didn't believe gender integration would be good for the Navy. He resigned his post at Boeing this summer for something that he wrote 30 years ago. Yeah, over 30 years ago. That's amazing. It's amazing. So anyway, you're going to hear that from Lawrence Rano. So I'll give you a headline from Stars and Stripes, headline from the Wall Street Journal, headline from Stars and Stripes. Pentagon and the State Department could be compelled to testify on the Afghan war, the House Democrats say. The U.S. Army removes an officer at Fort Stewart, Georgia, from leadership roles after anti-Semitic TikTok post. Second Lieutenant Nathan Freehofer made a joke about the Holocaust on his TikTok account, which the commander of Fort Stewart's 3rd Infantry Division called vile. So, Second Lieutenant, nice going. A Russian jet followed a U.S. B-52 into NATO airspace, which is a significant violation. RIMPAC ends on a bang. So, RIMPAC. ...1,600 small arms rounds were shot during a two-week exercise sinking a former United States Navy ship. Guided missile destroyer makes its 11th trip through the Taiwan Strait this year. Tweaking the Chinese. The all right, Wall Street Journal top headline is Black ex-franchise owner sue McDonald's alleging discrimination. Another story. Key to preventing COVID-19 indoors is ventilation. Next story. This is breaking news this morning. New York City will delay the start of in-person learning in schools by more than a week after teachers threatened to strike. So that in the news today. Top story in, well, U.S. Naval Institute News doesn't really have a page with top stories. All right. Video. Aerial refueling for E-2Ds will expand the reach of carrier strike groups. There's also a report, and this is important, I should read this. There's a report to Congress on the Navy Light Amphibious Warship. Yeah, or the LAW. And there's, I think, some video of RIMPAC ships shooting. What was the ship that was sunk? Forces began firing on the USS Durham, a Charleston-class amphibious cargo vessel. Nice. Why has it always got to be an amphibious cargo vessel? See, that's how much they love the amphibs. They're towing them out for target practice. Sad. Top stories in Marine Corps Times. Trump's popularity slips in latest Military Times poll, and more troops say they'll vote for Biden. Navy has taken its first deliveries of the next generation LCAC. I don't know. Has the LCAC ever been anything? Not so much. I mean, it's much ballyhooed. You see it off the coast. You know, we'll have to ask Jeff Kenney. Is the LCAC anything at all? I mean, do we use it? Does it go out on the Mew? Top stories in Early Bird. Number one, General Brown, who's the chief of staff of the Air Force. Quote, the Air Force isn't getting bigger. To win wars, it must move airmen into unmanned jobs. I'm sorry, undermanned jobs. Kind of an interesting little. The Air Force new Chief of Staff, General Charles C.Q. Brown, on Monday warned that the services can't count on significant end strength growth and will have to make better use of the airmen it already has if it wants to win a war against a major adversary. That will mean moving airmen out of jobs they aren't really helping accomplish the Air Force's mission and into jobs that are undermanned or emerging as crucial requirements. Brown issued a document on Monday, quote, accelerate change or lose, that spells out how the Air Force must adapt to a new reality in which the United States military dominance is no longer assured and peer nations such as Russia and China are increasingly aggressive and emboldened. The document presents the first look at Brown's top priorities and concerns since he assumed the Air Force's top position on August 6th. The document contains several ways in which Brown said the Air Force needs to adjust its personnel strategy to better care for airmen and apply their talents. He plans to expand on his call for change in his address to the Air Force's associations at their Airspace Cyber Conference in September. The next war, Brown said in the document, is likely to be highly contested and could see combat attrition rates and risks that are more akin to World War II than the uncontested environments in which we have become accustomed to. And Brown warned, the U.S. risks losing a war if its military does not adjust to the new reality. If we don't change, if we fail to adapt, we risk losing the certainty with which we have defended our national interests for decades, Brown says. We risk losing a high-end fight. We risk losing quality airmen, our credibility, and our ability to secure our future. Wow. How about that? Somebody actually calling it out. Number two, Army investigating soldier who made a Holocaust joke on TikTok. How about that? Second lieutenant makes a stupid-ass video on TikTok. It is national headlines. Number three, NATO, Russian SU-27 violates Danish airspace while pursuing a B-52. Yeah, like the Russians care what the Danes think. Number four, congressional watchdog to reviews Army sexual harassment and assault prevention program. So, Senator Tammy Duckworth, a United States Army veteran and an amputee, a helicopter pilot, has called for an independent review of the Army sexual harassment/assault response prevention, or SHARP program. And then the fifth story is the Navy's E-2 Hawkeye crash in Virginia. Now, this kind of caught my eye. It's by Jeff Zazulowicz, who I'm a fan of. The Hawkeye was conducting a training flight. It's an E-2C. Now, this is the old version of the AWACS. I believe there's an E-2D now. The Hawkeye was conducting a training flight at 4 or 5 p.m. when it crashed near Wallops Island, northeast of Norfolk. Both pilots and two crew members bailed out of the aircraft safely and sustained no major injuries. How about that? They bailed out via the cabin door and were already wearing parachutes, which is required when they board the aircraft, she said. Initial reports did not indicate that any personnel on the ground were injured, nor were any structures damaged in the crash. Huh. You don't see that very often, that they bailed out and the plane impacted and nobody injured. So be interesting to see what happened on board and yeah, like I said, don't see it very often. All right. So, we'll take a break. More Vol Marine Radio coming up next. Specifically, you're going to hear an interview I did with, and she's on active duty, and she's a prolific writer. In fact, you might remember her. Lauren Serrano, she's how I learned about, really, the Battle of Samar. Her grandfather was on the USS Johnston. Yeah, how about that? So she's one. I had a long conversation with Howard Hur. Now, Ohio Man will tell you, I told you to read the book, but he did not give it any kind of dramatic thing that she did. So anyway, that. She writes a paper entitled Why Women Don't Belong in the Infantry. That was fairly atypical at the time, still is. And you'll hear her talk about how that's impacted her career. And then she came on to talk about, after she came back from Afghanistan and had two kids, you know, the Marine Corps making this push to a unisex PFT where women are going to be held to more male-like standards relative to physical fitness if you want to be promoted. At least that's what she was asking. She said, okay, so I'm a woman. I don't want to be a grunt. And does the Marine Corps still want people like me? Or am I like a thing of the past? I've had two kids. And I love being a Marine officer. Does the Marine Corps still want me? So she came on and she had... So she's an interesting human being in that she... I think she enjoys the intellectual discussion and intellectual discourse. Now, the painful part of it that she has learned is doing that in public may impact your career. So you're going to hear her talk about that. So Lauren Serrano, always interesting, joins us next here on an interview we had to record over the weekend because she actually works for a living. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.